So I'm outside the Anarchist Book Fair here in Montreal with Andrea Langlois and Ron Sikolsky, who are two of the editors of a book that was just released called Islands of Resistance, Pirate Radio in Canada. I guess to begin with, can you guys tell me how the idea for this book came about?
Yeah, actually, it's very appropriate that we're here because Andrea and Marion van der Zoon, the other editor of the book, and I met at the Victoria Anarchist Book Fair, and we decided to put together with a bunch of other folks a group called Black Ink, the BC Anarchist Writers Group. And we then met together several months later, and one of the things that came out of that was the idea for this book. So it was germinated there at the BC Anarchist Writers Group Retreat Advance.
Okay. Now, of course, you know, pirate radio might be kind of either an underappreciated or just not a very well-known phenomenon in Canada. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, some of the research process and how you guys started to uncover these stories?
Yeah, it was. I think it was really fascinating. I became aware of pirate radio, partially here in Montreal. There was pirate radio used in the demonstrations in 2003 against the World Trade Organization. And Marion had also had a project here called TAR, which was Temporary Autonomous Radio. And Ron has also done a book on pirate radio. So between the three of us, we basically threw a call out to all of their networks. And it became a little bit like a process of investigative journalism, in a sense, where we just kept digging and following leads and trying to uncover examples from across Canada of pirate radio. And I think we came up with quite a wealth of it, but there's probably many, many instances that never came across our inboxes, so to speak.
Can you guys talk about some of the examples that you came across of pirate radio, either currently or in the past in Canada?
Well, I mean, maybe the place to begin is to talk about the different types of pirate radio that are in the book rather than individual stations. So they range from the mobile kinds of stations like Temporary Autonomous Radio that Marion is involved with, to community-based stations like the one that I'm involved with called Tree Frog Radio on an island in BC, to people using pirate radio in protest situations, which is the theme of the article that Andrea and Gretchen did, to people using pirate radio for artistic forms of expression that wouldn't ordinarily make it on the airwaves. So there's a variety of approaches to pirate radio. We didn't want to just focus on one. Some are very political, some focus on the spoken word in a very typically political way. Others are political in the way they challenge assumptions about culture and about art and the way in which technology can be used in a subversive context.
Mm. And I guess like one interesting thing just looking through this book too is, and you kind of touched on this, how pirate radio kind of almost encompasses many different worlds, but you have people who are using it for cultural, artistic purposes, and then for, you know, very political purposes. You know, would you say that those are kind of two different camps? Is there any kind of tension there, or does it just kind of flow together?
I would say what we did find is that while in the U.S., because there's more repression against pirate radio, there's a bit more of a movement. So we didn't really identify anything that we would call maybe a movement, but are hoping to see maybe more of a movement in pirate radio in Canada. So I don't know if there's tensions between people yet. I do think that some people like Marion van der Zoon, our co-editor, is very interested in sound art and does a lot of that, but also has the Temporary Autonomous Radio, TAR, her project that she'll... you know, that isn't without a political bent in some ways. So I think that there's definitely overlap. I think one of the most inspiring examples that we've come across is examples like in Barrier Lake in northern Quebec, where we have an Indigenous community using pirate radio to have a community radio station on their community that's creating links between different generations, that it's enabling communication within the community, but also is really a way to engage youth and maintain language, which is, you know, I think just a phenomenal example of how pirate radio is being used currently in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the purposes that we had in doing this book was to link those different kinds of ways of using pirate radio, because we see the connections rather than trying to see them as exclusive and contradictory.
Mm, okay. And I guess, I mean, maybe just the basic question, what is pirate radio? How could we define that?
Well, I'll begin, I guess. Pirate radio, in our definition, is unlicensed radio. So that for radio to be pirate radio, one of the ways in which you can identify it is that it's contrary to corporate or state control. And one of the forms of state control is licensing. And corporate control often takes the form of advertising. So the kind of pirate radio we're talking about, our definition of pirate radio, falls along those kinds of lines.
Mm. I think one interesting thing, just like in the preface of the book that is mentioned, is the fact that, you know, we're very much in the digital age right now. Some people have gone as far as saying radio as a medium is dead, or it's going the way of the dinosaurs. But this book tends to disagree. Could you elaborate on that?
I think that when television came into existence, people said that radio was dead, right? So I think that we're seeing radio become a bit more complex, and we're seeing things be dual. Like, we might have something on the radio, we might have it podcast, we might have it web streamed. But I think, you know, to say that radio is dead is a very North American centric way of seeing things, whereas around the world radio is very much alive. And I think even here it's very much alive, that people, it's so accessible, all you need is your radio, it's transportable. And I think you know, especially in other countries, it's such a important form of media that I would hate to see radio die. I think it's going to change. I think communications mediums are changing the way we communicate, but I don't think radio is going to be gone. And I think even as we open up new spaces, you know, people feel like because of Facebook they can communicate. I think it's still really important to continue struggling to be able to have our voices heard on the actual airwaves as well. You know, it's not that kind of media is not enough, I don't think.
Yeah, I think our point of view was, why not have both? Why have to choose one or the other? And those choices are often false choices that we're forced into, because we're taught to reject what the old technology is and accept the new technology as a replacement for the old technology, rather than seeing them as working together in some way. So that if you think of something that, you know, within recent years, when CDs first came along, that vinyl was supposed to be dead. Well, now you're seeing a resurgence of interest in vinyl. And MP3s come along, CDs are supposed to be dead, but yet CDs are still there. Why not have all those different formats available at once?
Another interesting dynamic, I think there's so many interesting angles in this book, is, and you touched on it a little bit, Andrea, is the indigenous perspective on radio, and how indigenous communities are using pirate radio as a means to assert their self-determination and sovereignty. So can you just expand a little bit on that?
What was really fascinating, actually, is there is a chapter on the history of pirate radio in Canada that kind of looks at how radio developed. But in our research, we also found that there's actually an indigenous history to pirate radio in Canada. The people who set up the co-op station in Vancouver, which is, you know, very big now, they were actually mentored by people doing pirate radio within indigenous communities. So, and in doing radio. So I think there's that history. I think that, you know, from what some of the writers who contributed here have written, is that in terms of looking at the licensing process, that if we look at indigenous territories as places of sovereignty, then maybe that's just a moot point, that indigenous communities don't maybe have to even think about applying for licensing because they have sovereignty rights in Canada. So I think that's really important. But I think the examples that we've seen, it just shows an amazing source of resistance and a way to capture oral culture and to resist colonization through the use of media.
Mm. Yeah, and I think many times in communities on a reserve, radio is not considered an old technology to be thrown away, but a very much a part of community life. So to be able to have your own radio station means something very significant.
And I guess finally we're here at the Anarchist Book Fair in Montreal, and you guys are tabling with this book. So I guess kind of the question of the day, looking at, you know, pirate radio and anarchist practice, what do we see as the link between the two?
Well, I think one of the things about pirate radio is that it's transgressive. So it challenges some assumptions about whether you need permission to do anything. And so if we're talking about autonomy as a key defining factor of anarchy, then pirate radio is one way of creating an autonomous zone on the air. Now, I live in a community that is autonomous in many ways. It's an island community. There's no cops that are part of the community. There's a volunteer fire department. There's a free store for the exchange of clothing and anything else. There's a whole approach to living that is based on autonomy. So when we introduced the idea of pirate radio, it was natural. People understood it immediately. And they didn't necessarily define themselves as anarchists, but they understood it in an intuitive way. And I think that's when anarchy is most potent, when it isn't just a slogan to be, you know, in someone's life, but it has a meaning that goes beyond just the word.
And I guess the last question I wanted to ask was, one of the kind of, I guess, stated goals of this book, this anthology, is to kind of use it as a kind of a jumping point, or to actually start to maybe reinvigorate, re-energize a pirate radio movement out of this. So, could you just talk a little bit about that and your hopes for this book?
Yeah, my inspiration in doing projects like this is also to look at the undocumented. You know, we could not find very many writings, if any at all, barely on pirate radio in Canada, even though it's been around and there's been a lot of practice. So documenting, I think, is a really important part of building movements. And I think I always hope to inspire. It'd be great to illustrate how accessible it can be. You know, people can order a transmitter toolkit off the internet and start up their own station tomorrow after soldering a few pieces together. You know, it is simple, but it also can be a way to bring people together on a project. And since getting here, we've heard of people who are thinking of starting pirate radio projects here in Montreal, which is great. So I think even our website, islandsofresistance.ca, people can go there and listen to audio clips to see what pirate radio sounds like, because without the sound, it's, you know, paper's great, but it's awesome to go there and listen to the people doing pirate radio in Canada and maybe start posting ideas there, and maybe we can kind of create a place to actually at least have a bit of information together about pirate radio.
Yeah, the article that I did in the book is called Squatting the Airwaves. And I start off with a quote from Colin Ward, who wrote a book called Anarchy in Action. Colin Ward just died recently, within the last couple of months, an anarchist writer. And even though he wrote about squatting, housing-related squatting, he never thought to include pirate radio as a form of squatting. My article tries to expand the definition of squatting to squatting the airwaves. And so hopefully this book will be expansive. We know that there's a squatters movement. People talk about a squatters movement. Why not include, you know, within that movement in a more, you know, a full-blown way, the idea of radio as a place in which autonomy can be created.
Great. Well, thank you both for taking the time to talk with us.
Great, thank you.
Wonderful to be on CKUT, thank you.